very famous wine from Margaret Valley, Margaret River, called Pinot Blanc and Pinot Noir. This is called Pinot Noir. That was just the sound check. Short for internet famous. Yeah, famous.
So I'm going to now introduce Jake, who will then introduce me and Andrew Brown.
Chanas and enlightenment, a natural process. Many of you have traveled a long way to be here, with about half of you coming from overseas. You've all left behind the busyness of ordinary life and intend to focus exclusively on deepening our practice under Ajahn Brahm's expert guidance. almost half of you are here for your first taste of meditation in a retreat setting, and we extend an especially warm welcome to you. We hope that you've all settled in and are making yourselves at home. Everything here is here to support you in this experience, and we encourage you to make use of this unique environment for your own benefit and ease. Still sounds like it's on the verge of feeding back. Does it sound okay? So just a bit of background on this retreat. It's a privilege to have Ajahn Brahm here with us. This is his first 8-day residential retreat here in England. Many of you know that Ajahn Brahm has been a monk for what he's got 4 years and is a renowned, don't say infamous, meditation teacher and an author of many books. Ajahn Brahm is also a trustee and spiritual advisor to the Anukampa Bhikkhuni Project, founded by Venerable Chandan here to my right. Venerable Chandan has organized this retreat in support of Anukampa's aims to establish a Bhikkhuni or fully ordained nuns monastery in the UK. This will be the first place in England where women have the opportunity to train towards full monastic ordination. And lay women and men will be able to deepen their practice by spending time as guests at the future monastery. Our first major step towards this goal has been achieved. Anukampa just signed a lease for a temporary Bhikkhuni residence in Oxford back on the 29th of November. And we will speak more about this at the end of the retreat. So, my name is Jake. I've just been asked to help by offering this introduction more, and I will be joining the retreat as a participant right after this. There are a number of days start, including the main Delcy Bridge. Is it Delcy Bridge? Managers Sean and Peter, who will take care of the day-to-day running of the centre. The kitchen team cater for our meals and washing up. So there is very little for us to do apart from let go and relax. Could Sue put her hand up? Sue over there with her hand up. She is our retreat manager for this retreat, and she can be contacted with any issue related to the retreat itself. She will also act as a point of contact between yourselves and the staff to minimize interactions. And the best way to contact her is by leaving a written note in the reception area in the envelope provided on the desk. Or if it's something urgent, by speaking to her discreetly around meal times. If there is an emergency and you cannot the duty manager can be contacted by calling the phone number which is left by the phone in the reception or outside the office. This provision is for emergencies only and not for retreats or maintenance related questions. So there's some words now about silence. This retreat will be held in silence, apart from the designated Q&A sessions, to support the practice of meditation. Silence includes all verbal and bodily communication, such as talking and bodily gestures, especially between you and other retreaters. So you can practice as if you were alone. Silence may be familiar to some people, and may be new and strange for others. But before we enter silence, we would like to give some practical information now about how you will be supported, and how we can all support each other in this unique environment to ensure your experience is as rewarding as possible. After this talk, instructions for the retreat will be given by Ajahn Brahm. So, on the topic of communication, as support for being in silence, you can contact Sue by leaving a note, again, in the reception area, as mentioned, or around meal times for any important retreat-related inquiries. Sue will also be able to pass on any message to the center managers, the restaurant supervisor, or the maintenance manager if need be. There will be opportunities to ask questions to Ajahn Brahm when indicated after talks or by anonymous notes for the evening Q&A session. And there will be a basket, a notebook and pens on the table in the Syndicate 1, which is the lounge area near Norfolk Hall. I think we probably all passed through Syndicate 1 to get here from the tea area. So daily schedule. And any important announcements will be posted on the wall near the dining room and on the windows outside Syndicate 1. There will also be one group interview session each, starting day 3, Tuesday morning. The list will be posted on windows again outside Syndicate 1. If you have a concern about any retreatants, please contact Sue or the teacher. Is that right? Contact Ajahn Brahm or should we?
Yeah, sure.
Rather than contacting the retreatant directly. Next bit about phones and internet. For the duration of this retreat, we ask that you turn off mobile devices and internet. This might feel a bit disconcerting for some of us, but it offers a very rare opportunity to go inward and build up the bright, beautiful energy of your mind. So once you've switched off your mobile phones and tablets, if you haven't already, please be assured that you can contact Sue or reception if you need to pass on any important message to friends or family, and we will pass any message on to you if they contact us with any emergencies. You can give the Belsey Bridge telephone number to a key contact in case of emergencies, if you haven't done so already. The Belsey Bridge phone number is, I don't know whether to read it out, but is the phone line where you're going to put it by the reception. Messages can be left via voicemail if the staff are not there to answer. If anyone wishes to pass on this number to a key contact, please ask Sue after this evening's session. Switching phones off and refraining from the use of internet really supports the retreat environment. And so the request is that you finish any business tonight if needed and then switch off. And if it helps with restraint, you can hand your devices in to the staff for safekeeping, or to Sue, who will hand it in to the staff. So, thank you for your cooperation with that. So, now a little bit about the use of the accessibility, including the ground. This is so that you can feel comfortable with what's happening here, and we can all relax into the space. So this hall here, we use this hall exclusively for sitting meditation in order to develop and preserve peace and stillness in the room. Please refrain from lying down unless you have permission for health reasons. We have provided either one basic floor mat per person or a chair. For reasons of space, we appreciate if you can settle on either the use of a chair or a mat, rather than keeping two spaces. Please keep your personal belongings, such as shawls, cushions, or any clothing, on your chosen space. If there is an empty chair or cushion, you may of course use it from time to time, but then please move your things back to your primary space when you have finished. This ensures that there is plenty of room for everyone to rest their legs when necessary. And if there's any difficulty with the seating arrangements, please contact Sue to ask for assistance. Naturally, we ask that you do not bring mobile phones into the hall, and that where possible, you refrain from using plastic bags or drinking in the hall to help keep noise to a minimum. A little bit now about the other spaces in this facility, for example, for walking meditation. So we are blessed with three main halls for our exclusive use during this retreat. Before the first sitting of the day, the Waveney room will be available for yoga or gentle exercise. After this, it will be used for group interviews or silent meditation. Okay, so scratch that, because the room for group interviews is now going to be the ditching of the room, not the way in the room. So they're just next door to each other. Okay. And the way in the room is also available for meditation. The Suffolk Hall is our walking meditation room. Please ensure you walk widthways across the shorter length of the room so that more people can make use of the room at any more time. Belsen Bridge has extensive grounds which you may also use for walking meditation, for exercise, or a secluded stroll. There is also a small forested area near next door's children's playground. Please do not do slow walking meditation in the village or the wider countryside. The neighbors may think we are somewhat strange. So this is the next bit about the dining room. Meals will be served in the dining room. Please take all your meals there for convenience of the center staff. There will be a bell for breakfast at 7:15 and for lunch at 11:30 p.m. In this hall, the Norfolk Hall, our main dining hall, and the walking meditation hall, which is the Suffolk Hall, please avoid entering the dining area at least half an hour before meals to give the staff plenty of space to set up the meal. And Ajahn Brahm and Venerable Chandra will be taking their meals 10 minutes before the bell. We ask that everyone else waits for the bell to ring. Within the restaurant, there is a special diet area for those who told us you have food allergies and intolerances. Please ask a member of staff if you require information on the ingredients in the food served. Tea, coffee, and other hot drinks are available in the dining room. Between meals, hot water flasks will be put out at 9:30 a.m., 1:30 p.m., and 3:30 p.m., and for our main evening tea break at 6 p.m. If the fridge is out of milk or soy milk, please contact Sue or Debbie, the restaurant manager, and it will be refilled. There is also a shop with snack items and toiletries. Interviews. Optional group interview sessions will take place in the ditching room, thank you, near the dining area, starting on Tuesday, the 11th of December. There will be one interview each in a group of around 16 people. the lists will be posted on the windows outside Syndicate 1, which is the lounge area near the Afghani waterfall. If you do not wish to attend the group interview, please cross your name off the list. So this is about the staff here, and the times that they'll be around. The managers of Nelson Bridge are available every day after 2:30 p.m. and most days from 7 a.m. in the centre office. Maintenance manager is available from 8 to 4 Monday to Friday. Debbie, the restaurant manager, is also around to help. However, we advise that to keep distraction to a minimum, you contact Sue with any concerns and allow her to approach the staff herself if necessary. For emergency, the 24-hour day emergency phone number is found in reception. The main three doors to the centre will be opened as soon as staff starts work at 7 a.m. And will be closed at 9:30 p.m. In case you find yourself outside when the doors are locked, the door code, there is a door code, and it's 3670. Your room key also has a blue fob attached to it, which can be used to open the door located at the reception. So please keep this key with you at all times. So does that mean that the area is that one door there? Okay. And that's for any time of the day. After 9:30. Okay. Oh, I hear them rattling. So this is about saving energy and saving water. Caring for ourselves and others includes being aware of our use of energy and resources. In the common bathroom areas, please use the showers between 5:30 a.m. and 10 p.m. only, and we ask everyone to please keep showers short. Also, please remember to turn off all lights in your rooms and bathrooms. If you're the last person in the meditation hall or the walking room at night, please make sure that the light is off when you leave. Just a few more points here. The venue has provided bedding and towels. And in the absence of English sunshine, there are three hair dryers that can be borrowed from the manager's office. Please ensure that these are returned immediately after use so others can use them. This is about fire procedures. The emergency fire information sheets are on the back of all bedroom doors and in each main meeting room. We ask that you read them carefully and familiarise yourself with the nearest fire exit to you. In particular, please keep fire doors closed. Please note that the fire system is sensitive and can be activated by shower steam, if you have an ensuite bathroom, or by deodorant being sprayed near the smoke head, and by steam and or smoke given off when using hair straighteners and or hair dryers. There's loads of ways to start off the fire alarm. If the fire alarm sounds, leave the building by the closest exit. Do not stop for belongings. Assemble quietly at the fire assembly point, which is in the car park outside the reception area, and stay outside until the duty manager advises us it is safe to re-enter the building. Ooh, last page. Okay, ethical guidelines. Ajahn Brahm will explain the ethical guidelines, which are undertakings to support a meditative atmosphere and allow this to be a safe space for everyone. When we all practice these guidelines together, it creates a beautiful space in which we are taking care of our surroundings and each other with an attitude of respect and kindness. The last bit is about lifts to the station and taxi. So is there any kind of update on that? I'll just read it first. Now you have just arrived, so it is helpful to put aside all thoughts of the future. Lifts to the station and taxis will be dealt with at the end of the retreat in the closing discussion on the morning of the 16th of December. Okay, so I think there was a request also this evening to perhaps make arrangements for leaving at the end this evening. Does that include after this talk or after this session?
Yeah.
Okay. So that. Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay, so, yeah. So I've actually already done this. If you go to the reception, there is a sheet of paper with some telephone numbers of taxi companies. I don't know if there's an opportunity after this session for people to mill around and get together or arrange to go back together. Anyway, if there is, please do that. And use those telephone numbers to book a taxi for the final day. I think the idea of that is that it's really helpful for everybody, all of us practicing on this retreat. We know that these arrangements have already been made in advance and that we can forget about it and just relax. Especially once that's done, please put all concerns aside and allow yourself to fully arrive and come into the present moment with full practice. So as of now, silence has begun, and we wish you a very beneficial, a restful, and a fun retreat. Are there any questions right now before I hand over to Ajahn Brahm? No questions. Very comprehensive opening talk. Okay, so I'll hand over to Ajahn Brahm.
One question.
This is about our room keys. We should just go to the toilet or something, and then we leave the door open or unlocked. It's great. In fact, it's necessary to keep all our keys on us at all times, because the staff at the center, if they go in there to do some cleaning or something, they will lock it at the end of their cleaning. So, so basically, everybody please keep their keys on them.
Am I asking the
more
because I have a
good question. Is there a way back of it?
No.
We can't do bells. So the idea is that it's a very relaxed retreat schedule, but you probably find you've got getting up anyway. But yeah, if you do have something other than my dog finding it, it would be good. Otherwise, it's self restraint.
What time is the hall open?
One time. The hall is this hall and the other halls as well. I think are open 24 hours around the clock meditation. For running, jogging, that sort of exercise, it might be good to do it outside of the grounds, just in the surrounding countryside, if that's possible. Yeah? 5:30 and 10, I think you said, 10 p.m. in the common areas. If you have an ensuite, then you can use it at any time, is that right?
Probably if I see somebody in the cinema, I don't know how to do it really.
going to sit at different times unless we show everybody.
I think so, unless it's especially cold. And if it's especially cold or especially hot, I encourage you to use Buddhist climate control, which is, you know what's coming. So when it's too hot, keep a cool head. And when it's too cold, keep a warm heart. So you cannot please everybody. And some people, if it's too cold, they tend to sort of try and get colds and flus. They feel very uncomfortable. And for some people, if it's too hot, they also get uncomfortable. So we try and find a middle way. Which is one of the reasons why, except for the end of the day in the early morning, during the day, please don't go into the room and turn on the heaters. Then somebody else goes 1 minute later to turn on the heaters. And then somebody goes in 1 minute later to turn them off again. Because if everybody has their preferences, which they do, then there's this chaos. So it's good that, where's she going to get out? That she's maybe in charge of the heaters. So we have to leave it for you. So it's just turn on the heaters or turn them off, depending on how you feel and the energy of the room is. If it's too hot, please understand that you can always meditate over in your rooms, in the other halls. There's many places where you can meditate. It doesn't have to be in here. So if it's too hot for you, maybe somewhere else. Too cold, somewhere else. But honestly, it is a bit warm here. So I'm going to go and meditate somewhere else. First of all, those of you who have come to your first retreats, please, we do have rules and regulations and things to try and keep us a very peaceful, calm retreat. But this is not a concentration camp. If you break any of those rules, you will not be hauled aside and put in the dungeon rooms. that is most important rule in any Buddhist retreat or Buddhist monastery is kindness, is compassion, is forgiveness. So first of all, if you see somebody speaking, don't go and tell them, "Stop it! You talk!" And then someone else will say, "So have you." And that's three people who broke the rules. But I know in England, there's a very wonderful way of bringing people's attention to the fact that they've broken the noble silence. And that is to give them the one finger sign. You know the one finger sign? Not the middle one, this one, yes. Just to remind the person. So that means that you don't have to talk. And even though not talking to one another is important, and if they do forget, don't scold them, because we have kindness and forgiveness, very important part. Just the one thing at a time is good enough. But it's also, when people are on retreats, sometimes it gets a little bit cold when we live together and we can't speak to one another. But part of noble silence doesn't mean you always have to frown. You can always smile at one another. And sometimes a little smile is all that's needed for us to show a sense of mutual respect and harmony, and the fact that you are here together enjoying this time of silence. So please make sure that kindness is the first of the rules of any retreat. Also, that we do have a schedule, but that schedule is not going to be enforced, which is one of the reasons why we don't have bells on retreats, not in the ones which lead to actually peace and stillness and a sense of inner freedom. Because otherwise, out there in that world, you have so many deadlines to meet. You wake up in the morning to your alarm, you have to hurry to get dressed or to meet a train or to get here, get there. And that causes a lot of stress. So instead, you can get up whatever time you think is appropriate. You can go to bed any time you feel you need to. Otherwise, you will find, especially the first few days of the retreat, you feel so tight, so tense. And in fact, it brings me up to my first story of the gentleman who went to see his psychiatrist, where he told his psychiatrist that sometimes I am sure, it's actually true, that I am a marquee. And other times I imagine, I'm sure this too, but I'm a teepee. And the psychologist said, "I've never heard that before. Sometimes you feel you're a marquee and another time you feel you're a teepee." And then the psychiatrist, "Ah, look, I got it. You're too tense." And the fact you're not laughing shows that you are too tense. Lighten up. This is not an interview for a job. This is not a trial for murder in the Old Bailey. Because you'll find that being too tense, being so tight, there's no way the body can relax and the mind can relax. Which is, I'll be explaining how important that is. So even though sometimes people ask, being a Buddhist monk, this is my 45th year as a monk, are you not sort of so tense and so afraid having to keep all of these rules, of being so mindful of making a mistake? And the point is, absolutely not. You relax into these rules. And in fact, all these rules They're not really rules, but they're not doing stuff. They're not speaking because why do you want to speak? We speak too much in life. It's one of the poems which is in the first page of the first book which I ever wrote. Grant yourself a moment of peace. Grant yourself. Give it to yourself as a gift. And you realize how foolishly you scurried about. I think it's pointlessly you scurried about. Well, running this way and running that way, was it really necessary? When you give yourself moments of peace, you find that you didn't need to do so much. Learn to be silent, which we're doing on this retreat. We learn silence. And we try to figure out we've talked too much. We do talk so much. In those retreats which I have given over the years, you do find that at first, for those people who haven't done a retreat like this before, it feels just so tight. Why can't I just talk and just say hello to somebody? So usually what happens at the end of the retreat, we allow people to speak and just to say hello to one another. And most people don't want to, because they enjoy the silence so much, they get used to it, they're not afraid of it, they don't fight it. And they tend to embrace that silence and start to love it. Why do we need to speak? And the next thing is that be kind, compassionate, and you realize your judgment of others and yourself is too severe. So be kind to one another. Be gentle, have a beautiful attitude of an open heart. If somebody makes a sound, what is their voice? And then they do it for some reason, I don't know why. So, you know, this is not trying to figure out who you're making the mistakes. And if somebody sees things different than you, don't judge them. Which means that if a person just does something which is, you know, against the rules which we have just explained, I don't know why they do that, maybe they need to. So in this way, we're taking away something which is called fear. We cannot meditate and have deep meditation because you have fear. Fear is what causes control, and control causes tension. And tension never allows the body or the mind to relax enough to get into deep meditation. Number two, reason why we don't have bells. I often just say that what would have happened if they had a bell in Bodh Gaya next to the Bodhi tree when the Buddha was trying to get enlightened? He got up in the morning and there'd be a bell, gong, time to go to bed, gong, time to get up, gong, time to do something else. And it's happened to me many times that you are just getting into a nice meditation, really, really peaceful. You're just really starting to bliss out, and then gong. It's not a good bell. Anyway, and you're disturbed. And there's other times. Other times I was sitting there and I was sleepy or aching, and for some reason or another it was going on too long. And that teacher, he hadn't rung the bell at all yet. And I was wondering, when's he going to ring the bell? And I mentioned this in one of the talks, that I started thinking all of these tricks. We call them in Buddhism skillful means. By getting a little either pea shooter or a little slingshot, and practicing first of all so my shot was accurate, and then when I wanted the bell to ring, I would pong and hit it from a distance, and then the teacher wouldn't know because he had his eyes closed, and a gong, And before they figured out what was going on, bow, 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 and I'll be out. But why do you want to do that anyway? Because there are some times your meditation is going very peaceful. And you're getting very deep. Carry on. There are other times when it's not the right time to do long meditation. So get up and do some walking meditation. What you're going to find out is you're going to be mindful, aware of your body and your mind, and to see what it needs. To find out how to get this mind very, very peaceful. So, all of the rules which we have, we call them 8 precepts, not to sort of kill any living being intentionally. And sometimes people almost murder themselves when they're meditating. Thinking that, yes, I'm going to sit through the pain, I'm going to sit all night, I'm going to sit longer than anyone else ever. That is all coming from ego and the sense of self. You never get anywhere that way. So the anecdotal stories. There was a monk a long time ago, one of the first monks who came to the UK. And he read in the suttas that the time of the Buddha would sometimes sit outside in the cold weather. It's called it the time of the snows. Although I'm not quite sure that I've never seen any snow in the Ganges Valley at any time of the year in this century. But anyway, it was supposed to be very cold, and so the Buddha would just sit just with his 3 robes. It was fine. And so this one monk who was staying in Hampstead by himself decided to try to go out onto Hampstead Heath in the winter time, January, February, when it was snowing, and do the same. Just needed an act of willpower, just endurance. And meditated all night, just no shawls, no hats, no socks, just to be the tough monk. And then he spent the next week in hospital with pneumonia. Another of my friends, who's currently somewhere in England, but I will not tell you where, he decided to actually just sit all night. This was, I was in Thailand, I was with him at the time. Sit all night, don't worry about the pain, without moving his body. And he managed to sit until dawn, at which time we had to take him to the hospital for a double knee replacement. All the times I have seen, I have found that the willpower, which is coming from a sense of self, ego, and you will find it destroys the health of your body. So don't use effort. Use kindness and wisdom. And understanding that, you'll understand that why we have these precepts. You don't want to harm anybody. That includes yourself, your own body and mind. You're not going to steal anything, to take what is not given. We wait for what is given to us. What comes along? The natural process of meditation. You don't go grasping stages of meditation. We don't go running after even stages of enlightenment. We don't steal them. We wait until they come to us. The food you have in the refectory, in the dining room, it comes to you. It's a buffet. You take what you need. We don't go calling out the number for the pizza delivery. And so they deliver the pizza late at night when you're really hungry. Now you have the number to open the door outside. You don't need to. I've been up with this. No food in the evening. No one is going to check on you. But we trust one another. So, we have not taking what is not given to us on this retreat. And look, I've been keeping 8 precepts for over 44 years. I'm okay. So it's not going to kill you. So, please keep the not taking what is not given. And it's also no sexuality, which means we look at one another, not as sexual objects, but just as human beings. Which means we don't act provocatively, we don't wink provocatively. I can't do that anymore, anyway. No one will be interested anymore. So anyway, this is not just to get into sensory desires, it's to find a world which is not governed by how attractive you look, not judging you just by things which bring other people close to you. We're just human beings traveling through this world, and we're looking inside ourselves rather than looking at other people, keeping things really, really simple. And just following in the line, the fourth precept, which we keep. And that precept is being true to ourselves. It's very easy not to keep that precept when we don't speak. But it's more than that. Is that how are you now? Not how you should be, or how it's said in the book, but being truthful to your sense of health and comfort right in this moment. Being true to how hungry you are and eating appropriately when you have your breakfast or lunch. It's being true. And one of the ways of achieving that, and most of these things I will be telling you afterwards during the talks, to be true to yourself means to find out what your body and mind needs. And very often I ask people, many times during the day, to ask your body, how do you feel? How are you? What do you need? Ask your mind, how are you? What do you need? Because when you ask a question of your body, or you ask a question of your mind, you're actually being mindful of the state of your mind. Asking a question pushes your attention onto that area where you can get an answer. And your body and mind actually gives you very interesting answers. For example, some of you may get the answer, I'm tired. You've come a long way, some of you. I think I've come furthest to Australia. And I do still have some jet lag. It's disappearing. Some of you have come from, again, Eastern Europe, some of Europe, or whatever. There are times when you'll be tired. Some of you will have, the body does weird and strange things. There may be some viruses going around, some diseases going around, and I should actually mention to you that I do have a contagious disease. It was diagnosed, I think, a year or two ago by one of my German disciples, and it's called Happy Titus B. Not hepatitis, hepatitis. And you've already started catching it. Be careful. Inoculate yourself. And be from Buddhism. Hepatitis Buddhism. But anyway, you do find that this is my own experience over many years, that sometimes, I don't know why, I don't know why now, sometimes you feel tired. And you ask your body, ask your mind, what's up? I said, I'm tired. We just had a sleep. I am tired. But there's no reason. Ajahn Brahm, my body says, I am tired. And so you know what I do? I listen to my body. I take it to bed. any time of the day or night, if I feel like that, and I can, I just lay down. You know what happens? You have this incredible short sleep. You know, immediately you just become unconscious. And then when you wake up, you feel so good. Then I usually either have a shower if it's the right time, or have a cup of tea or juice or whatever. And then I go and meditate. And I've taught that to so many people. They have their best meditations on a retreat. They're working with their body rather than trying to control it. If you try to control your body's going to win. And it's going to cause you all sorts of sicknesses and troubles. It's going to throw a tantrum. You work with your body, not against it. And so that always was being true to my body, being true to my mind. Being true to my mind. No, I'm not restless. I'm not asleep. No, I'm just in deep meditation. I'm not sleeping. I'm not restless, I just have to think about things. You know, I'm a manager, I've got to think about things. No, you're restless. So be honest to yourself and to your body, to your mind. And of course the intoxicants, which is the fifth precept. You know, it's really, I'll mention more about this afterwards during the retreat. But some of the great happiness, and people sometimes mistake this for being high on drugs. In one of these times I was visiting the UK, that in one of the prisons here in the UK, they managed, the Thai community and a few other people, they managed to get together a big Buddha statue which they'd installed in the prison grounds. Now, in order to have a place of peace, you know, for some of the people serving time in jail. And I remember just being here at the time, so being invited to participate in a blessing, opening ceremony for it. And there I was just walking around this Buddha statue inside one of Her Majesty's hotels. And there I was getting so much joy, so much happiness, contemplating and how this will give some inspiration, some positive energy in places where there's very little positive energy at all. And as I was walking around with a big smile on my face, out of the corner of my eye, I saw two prisoners, two crims. They were looking at me, they were just waiting for the food which was going to come later on, seeing what was going on. And they looked at me, and one said to the other, and I heard them, "That monk, he's on the gear." And apparently "he's on the gear" means, I'm not quite sure whether it meant marijuana or cocaine or ice or whatever, but it meant they thought I was on drugs. Simply because that's the only way they could relate to happiness like that. You don't need the drugs or the alcohol or anything else other than a peaceful mind, and it creates some happiness. So, in this retreat, do not be afraid of happiness. Sometimes people feel that they shouldn't be happy, but they get attached to happiness, and I'll mention this at length. Happiness is an important part of the path of the journey. So when it comes, let it be. You will get stronger and stronger and stronger. This is, believe it or not, a very happy path. An incredibly joyful path. More happiness than you could sometimes think you can handle. One thing I have discovered, personally, and other people confirm it, there's no limit to the amount of happiness a human being can endure. As long as it's coming from the mental and chitta sankharas. Beautiful happiness. Wow. 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 You don't say that but that's how you feel. So we don't need our contracts. It's not that we think they're bad or wrong or rotten or what's them. And of course we have the not eating. Why don't we have anything to eat in the evening? And a lot of times it is because that it's not really that necessary. If you don't see the food, then you don't even think about it. I mean, find it so easy not to have to eat stuff in the afternoon. And just eating in the morning time, having some good food in the morning, or even just before lunch, it's an old tradition. But it means in the afternoon or evening, that the blood is not going to your digestive system. It's actually going up to your head. In other words, you've got more energy. You don't feel so tired. You have an empty stomach, a free mind. And sometimes those afternoons and evenings where it's not devoted to eating, you'll find it devoted to something else, the beautiful peace of meditation. So even though we do have a tea time at a certain time, you don't have to go to the tea time. If you feel you've had enough energy input for the day, you can just sit quietly and be peaceful. Sometimes just the food is just a habit. In the evening we've got to do something. But out of kindness and compassion, I'm sure you've been told this, if you are sick, if you have some problem with your digestion or you're taking some medication and your GP has told you you have to take the medication with some of this and some of that with some food, it's fine for actually to take, you know, say some medication and get some, I don't know, some soy milk or an apple or an orange or something, whatever, a piece of bread. And this is, you know, with permission from the manager, that is no problem at all. As long as you don't make a five-course meal because you've got to take one tablet of antibiotics. That is just an excuse. And it's also just the next precept of, you know, we don't look at entertainments. Or, you know, use again distracting clothing. So we're not trying to attract other people's attention. We're not trying to stand out and be different. We're just being a normal human being. So we use clothing to keep warm and just to make ourselves comfortable and no entertainment. And someone says, well, what about you, Ajahn Brahm? You make all these jokes. Is that entertainment? Anyone who hears my jokes long enough know that cannot be called entertainment. Even though once, I must admit, the truth is that when I was in Melbourne, this fellow came up afterwards and he said that my material was unique at that time. It was in very well, good timing. And he was a professional comedian. And he offered me a job in the Melbourne Comedy Club. He actually did. And in Australia, all great comedians, they all started the Melbourne Comedy Club. So I had a great intro, a big break, to make it in the comedy world. Well, I decided not, obviously. But anyway, it's also good to just, you know, uplift people, to make them laugh, to actually give them some joy. As I heard from one Tibetan teacher a long time ago, that when you are laughing, you have your mouth open. And that's when you can throw in the pillar dhamma. And lastly, of course, we don't use luxurious furnishings. Just ordinary things. It's okay to sleep on a bed. I know that some traditional Asian Buddhists, they think if you are going to keep the eight precepts, you have to sleep on the floor. Here, in this retreat, I'm sleeping on a bed. This is an ordinary bed, it's not luxurious. I tried that a few times when I was teaching in a prison in Australia. The only place which I could get to rest at night was in a Catholic parish house. And, you know, they had a bed rate, they were very kind, just because I was doing some good stuff. And so, I slept on the floor. When I arrived just after lunch, they offered me lunch. something to eat? He said, no, no, thanks. And then I sort of went out to the prison to teach the crims. And when I came back, I'll be saving some dinner. So no, 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 don't eat any dinner. Next my precepts. And in the morning, sort of, you know, they came to make sure I was all right and invite me down for breakfast, and they saw I hadn't used the bed. I was sleeping on the floor. And then these Buddhist monks are really weird. They don't eat, they don't sleep. And they got all quite concerned. So after that, I slept on the bed to make them happy. Make some difference. And so this is not so luxurious. So we use these things for the right purposes, to keep a healthy body. And how much do we sleep? Some nights you sleep a lot. Some nights you don't sleep hardly at all. Don't be afraid of not sleeping much. If you were at home, if you had to go to work, of course you'd be afraid. I've got to get up at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning to get to work. I've got to get a full night's sleep. If I don't get a full night's sleep, I won't be able to perform at work. Especially if you say you are a doctor, a surgeon. Imagine, oops. Well, I never meant to cut that off. So, please. Sometimes you don't need to have fear. If you get it wrong, you get up too early, you can always go back to bed again later on in the afternoon or the evening. You know, sometimes you don't want to get up. Sometimes you don't want to go to sleep. So check your body and your mind. How are you? So you may 9:30 or whatever we're supposed to finish off, 8:30 or whatever, I don't know, the talk and the formal part finishes. If you feel really good, carry on. If you feel you're tired, go to bed. When you wake up, just get up. Don't even worry what time it is. You don't have to come to the chanting. You don't have to come to the morning sit. Just whatever you feel is appropriate for you on this day at this time. That is using mindfulness and wisdom, just rather than being a Pavlovian dog. Just getting up or being afraid because what other people might think of you. I am an Anukampa Bhikkhuni Project trustee, therefore I must get up. No, you don't. I am a Bhikkhuni. I have to get up in the morning. No, you don't. Have a break, you're working too hard. If you feel like it, great. If you don't feel guilty. Be sensitive to your body and mind. And that means that we just speak the right amount. Hopefully you're getting the picture here. I do find, if you are mindful and kind to your body and to your mind, yes, you may sleep a lot for the first few days, but then you start to build up your energies. You have some great meditations. One of the stories, a lady came to one of my retreats from Sydney, came really late. She was an executive. She had finished off all her work. This was actually a retreat I was giving in Sydney. Finished off all her work, 9, 10, 11 o'clock, finishing and just driving to the retreat centre. And just, I was in bed by the time she rocked up. So she went to her room and slept. And in the first morning, when I gave my first talk, she was a very intelligent lady, got it straight away. After my talk, she went to bed. She got up for lunch. After lunch, she went back to bed again. She got up for the evening talk, and after the evening talk, she didn't meditate anymore, she went back to bed. She only got up for the talk, for breakfast and lunch, and that was it. The rest of the time, she was on her back sleeping. And she told me that sharing a room with about three other women, every time she was conscious, the other women looked at her and said, "Who do you think you are? You're not a real practitioner. We're giving up early." She said, "They hated me." And I said, "No, they don't hate you. They're jealous of you." They wish they had the guts to do that. And I mentioned the story because after three or four days, he was exhausted being on his ex. There was lots and lots of work to do. And then after 3 days, she started getting up at the same time as others. And she soon caught up with her meditation practice, and after 6 days, she started to streak ahead. She was one of the star meditators on that retreat. I mentioned her because, praise her or not, she came with sleep deficit from her work. She was so tense, naturally, because of her work schedule. So she took the 3 days to be mindful and kind to her body. Because of that, after 3 or 4 days, she really had good energy. And then she took off in her meditation. For those of you who understand what is Ajahn Brahm talking about, aren't we supposed to strive not against our body, but with our body? Even the Buddha, before he became enlightened, he was trying that striving for so many years, for 6 years as a Bodhisattva. 6 years of hard effort until he gave up and wasn't getting him anywhere. And then he had the insight. All this striving wasn't leading him anywhere. And he recalled the time as a young boy, probably about 7 or 8, when he was watching his father doing a ceremony. Doing a ritual. And as you all know, ceremonies and ritual is boring as hell, especially for kids. So he was sitting under a tree. First of all, we'll be daydreaming. Until he let go and entered into what we call the first jhana. Years later, having exhausted all these other possibilities of getting some enlightenment and truth, he remembered that time. And it's in Majjhima 36, the Arya Parasana Sutta. And there he started to remember and thought, maybe that is a way to enlightenment, to Bodhi. And the word Bodhi meant awakening, from the Pali verb Bujati, to wake up. Maybe that's away. So he gave it a try, but before he gave it a try, he realized this is an important part of the Buddha's journey. That there's no way he can get into such deep meditation with such a tired, exhausted, weak body. So he began to look after his body. Enough sleep, wash, comfort, food, good food. And then found a beautiful place to meditate. Next to a river, under a cool tree. In those days, I was talking that I first went to Bodh Gaya in 1974. There was hardly anybody there. And that was not so long ago. Imagine 2,500 years and a bit ago. We chose that place because it was so silent. But next to a river, in cool breezes, under a beautiful tree, getting grass to sit on. It's not asceticism, it's called the middle way. So look after your body, and then you find it's easy to calm your mind. That's why you go enlightened. So in this retreat, it's not going to be forceful, it's not going to be tense. It's not a Zen retreat where someone comes behind you with a stick. I once did that over in, what was that in Fossil Hole, yeah. But no, what was that, 1972 or 3 or something. Went for a retreat there. Yeah, they made the most amazing custard. It two, three things which I remember from that retreat. Custard was this. I never had custard like that again. I don't know what century it was, but there's another little story there, but one of the stories was the first time getting up early on a Sunday morning. Really cold. You had to face the wall and hear the footsteps of the teacher coming behind you with a Zen stick. And I was really sleepy. But I'd always had some very lucky karma. The guy sitting next to me was more sleepy. So he got hit first. Wow! And I was not sleepy for the next 2 or 3 hours. Not because of a surge of energy, but because of sheer anxiety and fear. I didn't. But I don't know if you know them because I travel around a lot. In Hong Kong, I was talking with a Chinese Mahayana master, and he was saying that in one retreat over in, I think it was, actually I'm not quite sure, somewhere in mainland China, that they were having a retreat, a Zen retreat, and the master came along. So this middle-aged woman, she was nodding, so he hit her with a Zen stick. And she got out her cell phone, her mobile phone, and called the police. True, called the police, and the police came and arrested that teacher, that monk, and took him away. Now you know why we don't allow mobile phones. And that's not the way to meditate out of fear. So, one important thing which Ajahn Chah kept on telling us again and again and again and again and again and again, and again. You meditate not to attain things. If you come here to attain a jhana, if you come here to attain some enlightenment, if you come here to attain some wisdom, you come here for the wrong purposes. You come here, we meditate to let go of things, not against things. Chogyam Trungpa, for all his faults, he noticed a very important thing of Western Buddhism. He called it spiritual materialism. How many hours are you going to sit on this retreat? Are you going to beat your PB, your personal best? How long can you meditate? 40 minutes? Nah, that's nothing. I did that last time. I'm going for 45. 45, let's do it now. That's nothing. I'm going to do first jhana. That's nothing. I've got to do my first retreat. I'm going for second jhana this time. Second jhana? No. Go for third. I'm going to go walking meditation. I'm going to see how slow I can go. Staying up late at night. I did this when I was a late person. Sometimes in the retreat, I say I determined to be the last person outside the meditation room. So, you know, after we finish everything, I'll be meditating there. And after that, I hear all the people. I wasn't really inside in jhana or anything. I was just listening to other people as they left. They should all be gone by now. No, oh, my God, damn it. Can't they go? And then I suppose my eyes would carry down, and then another 10 minutes, they were still there. And after the retreat, I said, wow, why did you sit there for so long? They said, I was waiting for you to go. It's so dumb. So it's not spiritual materialism, it's just letting out the thing go. Not to judge yourself by this, not even to judge yourself by any standard, just to be, to let go. That's one of the reasons why we have these precepts, these laws. They're not there to give you more trouble. You have enough trouble as it is. They're there just to make it so that you don't cause trouble to others. As best you can. You always will cause trouble to others. That's just the nature of human beings. But it means that it's a way that we can have a kindness, lessen our trouble. And of course, because you can come in and go out whenever you need to,
Please don't make a noise when you get up. When you walk out, when you open the door and close it. You don't need to. Burglars, thieves, they can go into a person's house and they don't even know the owners. And they can walk without making any sound. They can open doors without making bangs. If burglars can do that, surely you can. And always remember, so what are we here for? At the very least, you may be able to train for another profession. It's very hard to find employment these days. I'm not talking about being a house thief. MI5. Do you think James Bond would make a very good meditator? His precepts are a bit dodgy. We know, I better drop the name. What time is this finish? Oh, no, it's still got time. We have one monk who ordained this new open place a long time ago. And when I asked him what he did, he was Nepalese, a Nepalese minister. And I said, what did you do before? And he says, I was in the Gurkhas, the British Army Gurkha. And he told me, one of the Gurkha tales, he says, you never know when a Gurkha comes. The only time you know it was a Gurkha who attacked your barracks or something is when you wake up in the morning and you shake your head and it falls off. That's the sign of Gurkhas. They were scary soldiers. And those good. Well, they'd be concerned about, you know, just ordaining him. You know, if I told a joke and he didn't sort of, you know, understand it, or he didn't take it too personally or whatever, I thought, oh my goodness, maybe I'll wake up in the morning. So they, or, but anyway, he was in the accounts department. that's all there was there. But anyway, he could, or those soldiers, they were very, very good at being mindful. They could walk in and out of the hall without making any sound. That's part of their training. They can do that. Okay. So don't go making noise, because otherwise, it's one of the reasons why people say, now let's all start together at a certain time, and 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, we start meditating, and then everybody sort of finishes at a certain time, then we come back again at a certain time. When we have a schedule like that, it does mean that all the disturbance and noise come at the same time. But surely we can do better than that. So, if you do finish meditating, just get up very silently. So no one hears you coming. No one hears you coming. As best you possibly can. Now it will happen, obviously, that sometimes we have to make a noise. And sometimes that's the way we cough. Now there's one thing I've also known when people cough. It's better just to cough straight away. Thank you. It's always so difficult. That is simply because we have something in meditation called the volcano effect. The volcano effect works like this. A volcano, you know, it has all this magma underneath, and it's, what's it called, the vent gets all blocked up, you know, with cold solid rock. Which used to be a magma before. And the pressure builds and builds and builds until eventually the volcano blows. There's this huge explosion and all these their toxic gases as well as particles of stone, molten stuff, go flying over all the villages around. It's very, very dangerous. Sometimes people say, I'm not going to cough.
you bottle it up, you stuff up your coughing vent. And what happens? The pressure builds and builds and builds. You know it's going to blow, you think you can control it. The more you control it, the more the pressure builds and builds and builds until. Everybody, even in Norwich, is a living exaggeration. But worse, all this really yucky stuff just flies like lava, like toxic gases over all the people around you. That is not a good idea. So please, if you need to talk about it, thank you, there we go. It's nice to see people understand my instructions and actually follow them straight away. So if you need to come, just come. And then it's actually much less of a distraction for people. So this is just learning how just to be with your body. And you know, maybe go back and don't try forcing the body, learn from the body. You learn from the body, you find the body and you working together towards peace and stillness. We don't try to attain things, these things happen naturally, as I said, the title of this retreat. So, that's anything I've missed out for the beginnings. Okie dokie. So, we now have on the schedule a guided meditation. So, if it's guided meditation, you have to follow my instructions. So first of all, please stand up. Okay, 5 minutes. Okay, 5 minutes. That's even better. 5 minutes for going to the toilet or having a bit of a stretch. Silence. Silence means no talking, but you can cough. I've never seen this. I should take one of these lovely cartoons about a person, a monk, who was also a ventriloquist. So he kept noble silence, but his puppy didn't. That's one way of breaking the rules. I didn't talk. My puppy. Hello, have a nice day. How are you today? I never said that.